And welcome to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're going to jump right into the program today because I want to take as much time as I can to talk with our guests and have them share with you about the subject we are going to talk about. You know, what's interesting, folks, is I heard about this when I was working for those 15 years, interestingly enough, at the Christian radio station. There were people who were talking about this, and I was a little befuddled because I didn't understand what it was, so it was kind of hard for me to put it into context. What context, might you ask? We're talking about the subject today of sacred geometry, how it impacts and transforms your life, the universal language of divine alignment. My very special guests here on the program today who are joining us, I will ask them where they're joining us from, are going to talk with us, Gail and Gregory, and is it Hoag's?
Hoag, yes.
I'm seeing Hoag's backup number, so I dropped the apostrophe, yes. Gail and Gregory Hoag, they are joining us to talk about sacred geometry. Welcome. Where are you coming to us from today?
We're in Lyons, Colorado, on the way to Rocky Mountain National Park.
Oh, very nice. One of these days I'll get to Colorado. I've probably flown over it on my way to New York City back in 1993, which is a lifetime ago. It's really great to have you with us to talk about this subject. And I didn't do so well with regular geometry in high school. I think I don't even think I squeaked by. I may have gotten a D in the class. Be that as it may, at least I got out of it. I did better with algebra, but we're not going to talk about sacred although I don't know if there is such a thing as sacred algebra, but that is another subject for another program. We're going to discover which remarkable and astonishing shapes have the capacity to change your life. One of the shapes I want to bring up real quickly here, we can touch upon this and then maybe go backwards a little bit. How does the tetrahedron, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, how does that play into this aspect of sacred geometry?
Ah, the tetrahedron, hey. So what the tetrahedron is, I'm going to grab one from the shelf. Give me a moment.
All right. And I'll let him do that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. And again, the book, by the way, is called Sacred Geometry.
That's right. It's called Sacred Geometry, the Universal Language of Divine Alignment.
Okay.
And that's what that looks like, the cover.
That's and a tetrahedron. Wow.
Now, the tetrahedron is right here. It is a equilateral triangle on four sides. So basically, if you have one something and then two somethings, you form a line. Mm-hmm. When you add a third element, you have a triangle or a plane. And when you add a fourth element, think of it like a ball, like tennis balls. You can rest a third or a fourth element right in the center dip. That's when you get a tetrahedron. So fourness is about a tetrahedron, and it's the first geometry that's created in physical matter. It takes us from a plane into physical 3D where we live. Mm. And so it's amazing in that if you add up all the degrees on the surface, you get 720 degrees, and every single geometry is divisible by that 720 degrees, all the other three-dimensional solids. And even things like the diameter of the sun, the diameter of our moon, the diameter of our planet, the diameter of Pluto, and on, are all divisible by this basic element. It's this thing that starts it all rolling. And that's the importance of a tetrahedron. Bucky Fuller called it the essential building block of the universe.
Now, there are some buildings, one in particular that I'm aware of in Arizona, that was built. It almost looks like a sphere, but it has multiple surfaces, and it's a dome, but it's what's referred to as a geodesic dome. Talk to us a little bit about what that's all about in regards to our conversation here, because it seems to me that somehow sacred geometry and the philosophy, if you will, and I know it's more than that, of feng shui, somehow I have a feeling they interplay, they work together. I know that feng shui is more placement of things, but it seems to me like a sacred geometry would be able to allow us to learn how to design spaces that would, how do I put this, better utilize, shall we say, the energy fields of the earth to be more positive, if you will, or beneficial, that's the word, beneficial to us than, say, the Georgian style box that a lot of us already live in.
That's true.
Yeah, it's interesting. Bucky Fuller talked about the tetrahedron engaging energy in a way that he called it the closest packing of spheres. So it was the way that energy could maximize itself in this space. And, if you start out, Richard, that, before form, before structure, there's just energy. And so everything is really built on energy, how energy flows. And there are very particular ways that that energy comes into the physical realm and starts constructing all of these amazing things that we see around us. So that's, one of the things that I find so interesting with sacred geometry is that it helps us understand we are not living in just some crazy random universe, even though at times it might appear like that. But there's rhythm and cycle and structure and precision to everything that we have here. And so Buckminster Fuller is well known for coming up with the geodesic dome. And, he was actually looking to architecturally design something that was really energy efficient, that was cost efficient, that worked in such a way that, if you take out some of the structural pieces of the geodesic dome, it'll still stand. It's not dependent on like some of the cross beams the way a Georgian architecture might be. So it's using universal principles in order to understand how energy works.
Are you at all experiencing in any way, either of you, in terms of your travels and the people that connect with you and that are interested in what you have to share, who might even be architects who are beginning to understand the importance of sacred geometry, and especially in what you just described from Buckminster Fuller, in terms of creating living and working structures, as I'll call them, that again are more beneficial to us, and actually might even I just finished doing a program where we talked about foods that can clear the brain fog and so forth, and I'm thinking, well, okay, that's a wonderful idea, don't get me wrong. But what if we worked and lived in spaces that kept the energy flowing in such a way where you didn't develop, in this case, brain fog or other issues in that regard? And going off of what I read just a few moments ago, will help us to raise our consciousness, not only individually, but collectively, to help our civilizations, plural, to evolve to the next level, getting away from a lot of the stuff we've been dealing with. And the one that comes to my mind is victimhood. It's like, enough already. Okay. We're not playing that game anymore. I'm not anyway, not any more than I have to, or that I catch myself doing.
Well,
Talk to me about that.
Richard, first of all, sacred geometry has shown up in architecture for millennia, over and over and over again. Whether you look at the pyramids or Stonehenge or cathedrals, there is so much that people for many centuries in many different cultures understood how structures have a very profound effect on how we feel, how we evolve, how healthy we are, and how conscious we are. And, you know, our journey with sacred geometry really was about how can we elevate the consciousness on the planet. So I'm so glad that you tuned into that and you brought that up. The first chapter of our book is actually about consciousness, where we start asking that question, what is consciousness? And here we are in this physical realm. And what we find with sacred geometry is that it's all very consciously created. There is the foundation of it is really about love. Now, when you go out and you're walking in nature in a beautiful place, and the birds are singing, and the colors are gorgeous, and the river is flowing, and you're feeling this lovely breeze, how do you feel? You feel great, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's normal, that's natural. And yet there are so many structures that we've created in our modern life that are the antithesis of that. They take us out of that natural flow. And so our work is really about bringing that connection again so that people can evolve on all different levels of their being, including and especially consciously.
So, Richard, what you were talking about beginning with feng shui and what goes on with other buildings, it's all about moving energy. And how can we, like with feng shui, arrange things in a space so that it works with the way things naturally are supposed to work? And that's why we feel good in a natural environment, because everything around us is reflecting what is natural, organic within us. And sacred geometry is studying how everything in the universe is constructed around very particular patterns and rhythms and cycles. I mean, right down to the atomic structure, to the molecular structure, up to the way galaxies work, the way galaxies position themselves in the universe. It forms particular patterns. And we've even found the universe itself has a very particular reflection of a dodecahedron, which is working with the way our life is created. So you look at the DNA structure of the body, the way the limbs, the fingers, the hands, everything is constructed around this particular pattern called the phi ratio. And that's an important thing to realize when you're creating environments that might want to reinforce that energy. And that's what certain Greek temples did, and you find it in Stonehenge, and even find it on the Great Pyramid at Giza, working with these same particular ratios so that they can move energy. Because ultimately, that's what we mean by sacred geometry. Everything is geometrical.
Mm-hmm.
However, when we focus on what gives us the most energy flow, that's the sacred geometry aspect of it. So what is moving energy? What is connecting us? What is allowing us to grow and feel good? Those are the geometries that are moving that energy, creating connection literally between soul and the physical body, because we're like an iceberg, if you will, with only a little bit that shows up here. So when we look at each other, there's only about 10% of us that we're really interacting with. The emotional body is invisible, but it exists in this place that some people can actually see it as the aura around the body. And that's on another dimensional level. And then the thoughts, the mind, that exists on even another dimensional level. So we have all these unseen aspects of our being where geometry is still controlling the way these different energy realms work, the way these different dimensions work. So when we create certain geometries in our environment, we can create an antenna, a resonance where we start being able to interact with those subtle energies much more powerfully.
You know, we're talking here, of course, about sacred geometry and its context of evolving of the consciousness. And it raises a question that my wife asked me after watching a documentary three times. She watched it three times. And the question that remained in her mind, even after watching this documentary three times, what is consciousness? And it seems to me that we theorize, and that's about all we can do, because we don't really know. There's nothing in Webster's, per se, that defines it precisely, that everybody will accept it. So I'm going to ask the two of you, if we're evolving consciousness, what are we evolving?
Ah.
I know that's a big one. That's like, so why are we here?
It is. And I believe, so let's just keep this ball rolling around. Mm-hmm. We're here to evolve consciousness.
Okay.
There you go. But what is it?
That's evolving.
Mm-hmm. So it's like at the basis of everything, at the source of creation, and then there is beyond source and beyond source. It's infinite. And we have no way of, conceptualizing infinity. And yet we feel within us the reality of that possibility, that everything goes on forever. And underneath all of this is what different religions refer to as God, as source, as creator, as intelligent infinity. That intelligence, that awareness on the grandest scale that permeates everything, is that consciousness that gives birth to everything and exists within every aspect of creation. There's a level of consciousness within us that is at a different level than the consciousness within a plant, within an animal, within a rock. Mm-hmm. However, we are beginning to see that even large bodies like a planet, like the sun, can incorporate a larger consciousness that interacts with everything else in the rhythms and the patterns that it sets and interacts with always. I mean, they are consistent. Everything in the universe keeps reflecting a certain consistency of beingness, mm-hmm. of connecting to this pattern of all that is. And our opportunity as a human being is to expand our awareness so that, as I was saying before, I actually have some pictures from our book that, mm-hmm. Let me see if I can hear.
And as Gregory is bringing those up on the screen.
There they are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry, Richard, you were going to ask another question.
No, I was just going to tell our listeners and viewers that this is Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Gail and Gregory Hoag, and we're talking about sacred geometry. And right now you're showing us some rather intriguing images. Explain that.
So It's like what I said before is we're like an iceberg, where the tip of the iceberg is where we show up in our 3D reality. And these other levels of the iceberg, the other dimensional levels, are where our emotional body, our mental body hang out. And the point of this metaphor is to understand that soul, source, consciousness is moving constantly through everything into the physical. It's like that metaphor on the right where we see a boat that is pumping oxygen to a deep sea diver down there at the bottom. And it's this flow of energy from source that is keeping us alive. And as it says at the very bottom of this image, all difficulty and all disease is the blockage or denial of this energy flow from source. So energy needs to constantly be flowing. And when we block it with things like what you see on the right over here, with electromagnetic pollution, can distort that flow of energy. The stress we're experiencing, which science is more and more telling us that when we get stressed, we are potentially triggering difficulties within our body, disease, as well as negative emotions. Anger can show up years later as cancer. And we know that, we've documented that. And what's going on with judgments and beliefs and toxins in our environment, all of these different elements are actually blocking that flow of energy. And so what we do with sacred geometry is look at what are the elements of that energy and the way it's expressed itself in the universe. And when we duplicate those geometries in an environment, we start feeling the energy flow. It's like being in nature. It automatically starts allowing us to take a breath, to open up, to feel and think and see a little differently than we had before when we were closed in, and closed in by our own emotions, by our own thoughts, by our environment, by the toxins, and so forth.
Wow. Well, I will tell you that it is fascinating to consider all of the possibilities, especially with some of the experiences that I've had in my lifetime, just in the last 25 or 30 years. I became a Reiki master, and I was told that I was not the source of the energy that I was sending off, whether it be in an absentee healing or what have you. I was a conduit that. If I became fatigued and worn out, I was doing it wrong, so to speak. I was trying to send it from me, and you don't want to do that. You want to use the energy that's right there in the universe. And I found it fascinating also the description of how the energy was used. I might be directing it to a person or situation. However, I am not directing that energy for a specific outcome. That is not up to me. It is up to the universe and the individual or situation as to how they choose to use it. Are there, and of course, in Reiki, there are these symbols, which for the longest time were supposed to be kept, I suppose, secret. You know, they were so important, so sacred, if you will, that it wasn't supposed to be publicized to the general public. Well, since I was made a Reiki master, my wife and I've seen them on the internet, which is, I suppose, a little unfortunate, but maybe, I don't know, maybe the rules have changed, time moves on and so forth, and the universe says, I think it's time to release them. I don't know. But that raises the question when we talk about sacred geometry. We've talked about it, of course, in structures and so forth. Let's say we're living in a place, a structure that is your typical box, okay? We are fortunate, my wife and I, that we live out in more out in nature. We still live in a box. Don't get me wrong, but all around us we have huge oak and pine trees, lots of grass and hills, and wonderful wildlife. But what I'm wondering is, are there symbols that we can create? And of course, then the question would be, out of what? But are there symbols that can be created that we can place in, shall we say, the feng shui fashion that will help us to continue our evolutionary process of our consciousness?
Well, you know, Richard, well, you ask wonderful questions. This is a very thought-provoking conversation.
Thank you.
And thank you for that. And getting back to what you were talking about with Reiki and symbols, you may tune into those symbols, but what it's actually doing is it's anchoring you to some precise energies that you are a conduit for that get projected out, whether it's to a person, a particular individual, or the planet, or whatever it is that you're working with. It's the flow of energy that's really what's important here, because getting back to the beginning of our conversation, we are energy, and we are living in a three-dimensional plane. So when we work with three-dimensional objects, it actually is channeling that energy. The symbology is something that's really interacting with your psyche, with your consciousness, your awareness. What we found over the years, and that's why we've created all kinds of different structures. We've been doing this for close to 40 years together. And so we've developed all kinds of different structures that are working with the three-dimensional principles of sacred geometry and materials so that we can actually create a flow of energy for people, for them to maintain a connection. When you're living in a beautiful place in nature, we're very blessed that we are also in Colorado. We have fantastic wildlife around us, and the mountains are nearby. We have a river that our land has on it, and it's an amazing place to be. And it revolutionizes how we feel. It's really different, to walk outside, hear the sound. Now we're in spring here, and we're starting to hear the sound of frogs, and it's so wonderful, real different than the sound of cars, heavy horns beeping, and all kinds of different industrial-based sounds. We're meant to be in nature. Nature is what we spring from. So everything in nature has a contribution. It's part of this creative energy. It's part of whether you want to call it God, source, consciousness, whatever it is, there's a oneness. And I think that our English language struggles with finding the words to really, tap into what this essence is. And what's most important is to live it, to learn how to connect to it, to recognize more understanding of not only what we can feel when we're, in a beautiful place in nature, what we can project to the world.
Well, it is something that we're certainly working towards in that regard. I also marvel, and this is something that you were talking about, Gregory, in reference to like the universe and so forth, and that the sacred geometry permeates two aspects. Number one is, I'm in the process, as I've shared on this program before, of cutting up an oak tree that fell last year during the storms. The root system obviously had been compromised, and so now I've got a very large tree, and boy, it's taken a long time too, because this was a large tree. Could have been, I don't know, 50, 75, or 100 years old. But what I'm noticing What's fascinating for me is specifically as I'm cutting into the trunk, and I can't see the rings because the chainsaw that I'm using kind of obliterates the actual rings of the tree, but it shows a very thick space between the edge where the bark is going in, maybe, and the diameter is probably about a foot or so across, maybe a little more. And it goes in maybe 6 inches. And it's pristine, beautiful looking wood, just gorgeous, just no marks, no blemishes. But then you have this, we'll call it ununiformed circle. And inside that circle is a lot of a shaded area. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, well, I'll tell you what, the latter years of this tree were really good. I mean, it did fantastic because, you know, the outer area of the tree, you know, based upon the cross section. But then the early years of this tree starting looks like it was a little on the rough side, you know, because it's got these shadings in there and so forth. I have a feeling that's kind of the way we are as human beings. And I being 64, almost 64, I probably have that small little ununiformed circle in the center of my core that I'm working on, so to speak, cleaning up, getting that shadow out of there. But that's also a wonderful metaphor for what makes us who we are, right? That oak tree, in spite of the fact that it is now down, while it stood, it was that ununiformed circle and shaded area that was part of made it what it became when it stood strong and tall. Through the sacred geometry, is that something that we can learn to tap into and recognize the good, the bad, and the ugly, if you will, of who we are, and embracing all of it, saying it's all of it makes me who I am today. No regrets. I'm not going to say I wish I could go back, because first of all, you can't, but that I can learn from the shadow side, if you will, of self, so that I can release some of the three-dimensional elements to be able to enter that other 85% of who I really am, to that soul level.
You know, it's so important for us to be present and accept all that has been, because the universe doesn't waste energy. Just think of all those things that we've gone through that we draw upon in the present to help us be compassionate with others that are going through those things now, to be compassionate with the situations that we see in the world. You know, there's so many things where if I hadn't done this in this way, I wouldn't be where I am now. So it's just that miraculous play of the way each life unfolds, and no one gets away with anything, really. I mean, we have to go through our stuff, and if we don't learn from it, we do it again, and we do it again, and we do it again. And the beautiful thing, I think, for me about sacred geometry is just the tools that we build have supported me in understanding this process, in watching myself from a higher perspective and not taking this character so personally, knowing that he has gone through stuff and he still sometimes acts like a real, you know, fill in the blank. But at other times, he does things really well. And if I'm watching him, if I'm able to be working from a higher perspective, I can help that process along. I can help this character watch what comes out of his mouth, so some of the things are not as abrasive or off as they used to be. You know, it's the learning and awareness, and that learning doesn't have to be all tucked away just inside this thing we think of as our brain. It's that aspect of us that is really bigger than us that we can access through the doorway of our heart. And so we often talk about, you know, coming from the heart, and I'd like to put a new preposition in there and talk about coming through the heart, because it's the higher, that major part of the iceberg that has access to all this knowledge in the universe. That can watch the tip of the iceberg, you know, where Richard's hanging out, where Gregory's hanging out, and say, oh, you know, if you just look at the tip and that's all that exists, that's what we call the ego. And it wants to survive, and it's afraid of dying, and it's afraid of losing. It's afraid of not having enough. You know, when's it going to get enough money, enough stuff to be happy? But, you know, that true happiness, that true love exists in the bigger part of ourselves, at the heart, the core of ourselves. So that aspect of us, as we advance in years, sometimes we advance in awareness and are able to be more inclusive of all that has been, all that is right now, and looking at it from a perspective where we see things more universally. We see our connections. We see everything being connected energetically. And we go, oh my God, I am really part of all of this. I am part of you in the sense that I need to treat you with that respect and love that is due that aspect of me. And together, we move into some place of a higher understanding, and the planet slowly starts shifting the more each one of us chooses to be of service to all, because that's all there is. That all is us. That all is me. And me is becoming a we the more our expansion of awareness moves out.
You know, it raised in my mind the golden rule, if you will. Some people refer to it as, Jesus spoke of it, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And in the context of sacred geometry in our conversation here, I think it needs to be modified, do unto others because they are you.
Exactly.
And you are they.
Yes.
There is really no separation. I wanted to touch on some, actually two things. Number one, because number two is right in front of me, and I'll ask about it in a moment. My wife and I happen to have a video, believe it or not, we still have a VHS player. And we have this video that we got probably 20, maybe 25 years, 24 years ago, what have you. I'm trying to remember the organization. I think it was like Future Studies or something like that. And the title is very simple. It's called The Merkaba. And it has all of these geometric shapes, the tetrahedron and so on and so forth. And they say that what they will ask you to do is you're supposed to, I don't know, maybe an hour long, but it goes through two different versions three times of the visuals of the tetrahedron, as well as the spoken word. It's sort of a meditative kind of thing as well. What do you know about, not specifically that video, but of this thing that is referred to as the Merkaba?
The Merkaba is, let me grab another model.
All right. And while he's doing that, let me remind you folks that this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. It's one of the things we talk about a lot that was just alluded to, that the choices that we have made have brought us to where we are now, to you listening to us and to us having this conversation. And Gregory, if you will go ahead and pick it up from where we left off there, go right ahead.
Okay. So when we talked about a tetrahedron before.
Mm-hmm.
A tetrahedron is, if you set it down, it's always going to have one face down and one point up. So that means the energy flows from a face and flows out the point. So no matter how you drop it, it's always going to be flowing up from the mm-hmm. earth. And so in a way, that's out of balance. To be totally balanced, it forms another tetrahedron pointing down.
Mm-hmm.
So here, if you can see this, we have one tetrahedron pointing up and one tetrahedron pointing down. And this is perhaps one of the first geometries that's completely balanced that has been referred to as the Merkaba.
Mm-hmm.
That is the vehicle of energetic travel that exists around a human being. Now, there are other more complicated geometries that grow out of this and are also part of other more complicated energy fields around us. But this is the simplest one that was really put out a lot. It's starting in the early 1980s, so that would have been about 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was put out a lot by a man, Drumvalo Melchizedek. And I used to make models for him back in the 80s and 90s. And this is the Merkaba that was referred to at that time as that energy vehicle. Now, another interesting thing about this geometry is that two Polish scientists recently, within the last few years, imaged a single photon. Now, a photon is that energy carrier of everything in the electromagnetic spectrum,
mm-hmm.
from radio waves to gamma waves, X-rays, it's all carried by photons. And that photon has a geometry. And curiously, this is the geometry. And if you add up the numbers of degrees on the surface of this, you get 4,320 degrees. And if you look at the radius of the sun that created this geometry, it's 432,000 miles across.
Wow.
And so you see the resonance with 432, and then you take 432 and you square it, and you get 186,600 and some miles per second, which is within 0.02% of what Einstein considered was the speed of light. So what I'm saying is that harmonics is the way universe moves energy. So the photon has a geometry, it's energy. It has a shape with numbers that relate to its speed, that relate to the sun. And whoever built the pyramid at Giza, there's arguments about when it was built, how it was built, and I'm not going to get into that, but I am going to say, I think we can agree that they knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do it by accident. And I believe they were doing it for energetic purposes. And if you take the pyramid at Giza and you blow it up so that the peak of it the top of that pyramid to the base of the pyramid. You put the base at the center of the earth, the equator. The top will hit the middle of the moon when the moon is put next to the earth, if you put them right next to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're going to find that there are a number of parallels with the way they built that pyramid, that you get the perimeter of the pyramid is equal to the circumference of the earth, which is what is happening with that that measurement I just showed you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another measurement where if you just put the peak at the edge of the earth and let the base be where the diameter of the earth is, then it's going to give you the exact polar dimensions of the earth and the diameter of the earth. And that only happens if you use a ratio of 1 to 43,200. Again, the 4-3-2 measurement. And I believe they were doing that because they understood that 4-3-2 is intimately involved with the way energy works, the way everything from light to radiation from X-rays, it works on this harmonic. And they were tapping into that harmonic with these ratios. And so that's how sacred geometry can start to give us the measurements of how things work. And I can show you right now, let's see what happens with, if you go and look at the diameter of the moon, it's 2,160 miles, and a cube has 2,160 degrees, and a zodiacal sign, we just are passing out of Pisces, we're starting to move into Aquarius. Each one of these periods is 2,160 years. So you see, that's what I mean by harmonic resonance. And that's how the universe creates everything, through these resonant geometries and flows of energy. So here, just adding up certain shapes, tetrahedron, octahedron, and so forth, you get the diameter of the sun in miles. These other geometries give us the diameter of the earth, and the cube is the diameter of the moon. And you add those together and you get other geometries. So these are the geometries that are sitting next to me right now.
Mm-hmm. That was where I was going next.
So, you know, this particular geometry is working with that phi ratio element I talked to you about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, when we work with a calibers that measures that, we can see that the first digit of our big finger is in a phi ratio relationship. The finger to my hand, my hand to my elbow, you know, my head to my feet, all of these different aspects are the way the body is created, right down to DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun and the moon and the earth, especially the moon and the earth, are creating these geometries that relate to life, that help life be fostered no matter what's going on. So we think about the miracle of life, and yet it's life following a geometric pattern that is set up by the dance of the moon and the earth together. And there are so many aspects of the universe. The measurements that keep showing up, the numbers that keep showing up, are all these measurements and numbers that are evoking life and what we know as the essentials for life, the way amino acids work together in particular relationships and particular numbers. It all happens again and again, following these patterns that are essential to life. And when we bring these patterns into our vicinity, into our rooms and our homes and onto our bodies, we can start feeling what's natural and real and allow that energy to shift us.
This to me is so fascinating. There was another structure, if you will, that at first I'm thinking, wow, this probably came about with the advent of the computer. And then I started thinking of the natural world and realizing, no, this has been around probably as long as the universe has been around. And what I'm speaking of, and I have one of these huge wall posters of this incredibly beautifully colored, multicolored fractal. Talk to us, if you can, about the relationship that a fractal has. I guess you might want to describe it for those who don't know what it is, and its relationship in sacred geometry. Ah, yes.
Ah, yes.
There they are. There they are.
You see, fractals, it's like what's amazing about the universe is that the way it works, we discover something that's new to us, like fractals, and it's like, oh, this is showing us how the universe has been doing it all along.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you zoom in and you have the big picture and you look at the little picture and you keep going smaller and smaller, and it starts to reflect the big picture again.
Mm-hmm.
So especially when we look at the lower left of this image, where you see this broccoli, where all the little nubs are mimicking these big nubs that spiral around. And these are the broccoli on the left, and there in the middle is the galaxy that's also demonstrating this same phi ratio spiral.
Yeah.
And these are the same ratios that show up in the human body. The thing about the human body is we stop growing at a certain point. You know, our arm gets so far out, if our arm kept growing, it would start to look more like this seashell. It would start to twist back on itself because it keeps growing and growing and growing. And that's why plants start to get into these spirals. But we're at the core of the spiral right here with all these relationships. And as we looked at the hand on the right, I said the finger is to the whole hand as the hand is to the elbow. And then the elbow is to the forearm going up to the shoulder, all working with the same numbers, 1.618. So, you know, growth is the original, just the original display of fractal, you know, origin and growth. It's like the wonderful thing about the phi ratio is that everything you can trace back, everything that's happened all the way back to the beginning. And then the plant knows where it's going to be going all the way out into the end. There'll be slight changes because, you know, there's going to be a drought this year, or it gets a little hotter, or there isn't quite the right nutrients. As you noticed in your tree, things change a little as far as the growth, but the pattern is still there. That oak is never going to stop being an oak.
Right.
The acorns it produces are going to have the seeds of oaks within them. This is the way universe propagates. And yet it's on the big scale and on the small scale. It gives us that saying that we've all heard again and again, as above, so below. And that means within this dimension, you can trace that in the way things grow. Energetically, at the higher order of the universe, what we call love and consciousness, and realize that we are attempting to reflect that level of consciousness on this level of being. And that's our job. That's our difficulty. That's the challenge. That's why we've been born. And by goodness, it's taking a lot of work sometimes to try to do that. And yet, what else are we going to do except try to bring the biggest aspect of ourselves that we can touch, that part that is loving, that part that is incredibly, you know, connected to everything, and bring it into our experience on this planet? Because I think all of us that are waking up to this potential and process want to see things shift in our daily lives, so that we reflect a little more of this loving aspect that we know exists within us.
We are talking about sacred geometry and how it impacts and transforms your life, the universal language of divine alignment. The website is iconnecttoall.com. That's iconnect, the number two, the word all.com, which we will be linked to so that you can find out more about what Gregory and Gail are all about and the work that they are doing. I find it utterly fascinating, this conversation. You can also get a looks like a free chapter, if you will, by going to iconnecttoall.com/chapter. And you'll have an opportunity to at least get an insight into all of this. The conversation we are having is here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I always hate to see these programs come to an end because there's always so much more that we could talk about. I've got a bunch of questions that roll around in my head, but at the same time, I'm also very much aware that the universe asks the questions. I'm just along for the ride. I have a very curious, a curious mind, a curious brain, and imagination, and you were showing, of course, just a moment ago, the image of course, the DNA, and I've often thought, well, now wait a minute, the DNA is nothing more than information. That's all it is information. It has no, as far as I know, it has no consciousness. It is just information, which means that this information has been created in some fashion, which means that there's the implication that it can be, I don't want to say rewritten, but it can be, shall we say, altered. It can be adjusted. It can be modified, and so forth. And I think that we are doing that through this process of transformation, which I honestly believe, again, the points of reference that I have, Jesus spoke of when his disciples, marveling at his miracles, asked him to teach them how to do these miracles. He said, sure, but you're going to do greater works, greater miracles than these. And I honestly do believe the greater work is the transforming of our lives. And that is what you folks are all about. And I'm very grateful that you folks have given us so much time here on the program to talk about this.
Thank you, Richard. That is really why we got into this from the very get-go, where Greg and I, in a very unusual way, found each other, even though he had actually been given a special business card that I had created with a piece of artwork on it and he had it in his wallet for over a year before we actually met. So I think universe oftentimes wants us to connect in what sometimes becomes miraculous ways, and that there is a higher purpose, just like we're seeing in all the things we've been talking about. It's not just numbers and, certain, patterns. There's intention, there's consciousness behind it. Creation has consciousness. It's held in the container of love. And that's our job as souls here in these bodies on this physical planet. We're here to project that love. And one of the biggest issues that we have going with us, going for us, is that we're disconnected. We have so much that disconnects us because of modern life. That's why we build our tools. That's why we do what we do, because we've found ways with all the work that we've done through sacred geometry to build different kinds of things, from pendants to structures that support us in maintaining and reestablishing that connection. So even with the DNA, I look at that and our brains, and I go, well, there's material there that you can say, well, what does it actually do? What if it's an antenna system that's out there just ready and ripe to tune in to the love in the universe, the creative principles of universe? Imagine what we can do with all of that, particularly when we recognize that we are all one. We're not all here as these divisive elements. We all spring from the same source. And so, that's really what our work has been about over all of these years, and to impact this transformational process that we're in, and see a higher level of consciousness be projected on this planet.
I have often mused that the founding fathers incorporated, of course, in there the inalienable rights. And again, they didn't list them all. They only listed three: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And quite honestly, as a spiritual being, and my father now is totally a spiritual being. He has left the body, as has my eldest sister. And those concepts that the founding fathers wrote about are only relevant in the third dimension, in this dimensional world we live in now. But my observations from what I have read from the ancient wisdom teachings is there is no individuality because we're all connected. So how can you have life and liberty if we're all connected? I mean, someone's like, well, then we all have life and liberty. Well, okay, you can argue that too. But happiness is, to me, a construct of this world, of this reality. It's not about the spiritual world any more than, and again, this is just my observation, I wish not to offend anyone, this concept that when I die, if I have a particular belief system that I have adhered to most of my life, that I will spend the eternity at the feet of the Creator, worshiping the Creator. And I'm thinking, really? I don't want to do that. That's boring. I'll come back here. As challenging as it is to live here, I'd rather do that and be connected to the Creator than be at the feet of the Creator worshiping for all of eternity. I just don't understand how that's an existence that anybody would really want. Maybe for I don't know, a few hours, maybe a day, but it's like, hey, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm very grateful for what has been given to me, and I've taken and I've used it to the best of my ability, but there's got to be more even in the next dimension. By the way, I interviewed a physicist here in Santa Barbara, oh my goodness, 10, 12 years ago. And we went to lunch and we were walking back, and he was describing to me He had written a book called The Fifth Dimension, not about the rock group. And he says, I can prove to you the existence of the first dimension, the second dimension, and the third dimension. I cannot prove to you the existence of the fourth dimension that he referred to as time, but I can show you a device that we use here to measure it. And then he went on to, and I cannot repeat what he said because I can't remember it all, but he went on to describe the fifth dimension. And when he got to the end of his description, we stopped and I turned to him and I said, you do realize that the description that you just gave of the fifth dimension is best summed up in one word that a whole bunch of people on the planet know. God. For lack of a better term, that was the fifth dimension. Now, based upon sacred geometry, are there more than five?
Sacred geometry is based upon what we can build in the third dimension.
Okay.
And our experiences have taken us into higher dimensions, into the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh. It's like after a while, it becomes, so what? I mean, we're just stretching beyond human comprehension, beyond, mm-hmm. It's like when I was talking about infinity.
Mm-hmm.
We throw that word around as if it were something that we're capable of being thrown around,
yeah,
and comprehended, but it's incomprehensible. And from this perspective, where we are in the third dimension, we know it's, we can call it third because we have three different axes, an x-axis, a y-axis, and a z that comes out because it describes three-dimensional
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We know that something exists on our emotional level that we can't see. That's what I was describing with the aura, because some people can see that. We can show that with certain types of equipment. It's hard, but you know, it does show up. And then it goes on mentally. And I believe there are so many dimensions beyond that, all the way to soul. And the interesting thing to me is, like when you were describing the unalienable rights and that happiness was one of those, I see the little character that we call the ego that's at the tip of the iceberg. When that was created, when we first came into being, we started working on survival. And all the things that come from human beings are oriented toward survival in this dimensional reality. And that means really all the kinds of emotions that we generate are survival emotions or fear emotions, things that devolve into anger and to sadness and into guilt. These are fear emotions, and the joy, the happiness that we often feel, that's coming through our heart center from higher self. It's the higher aspects of our being that literally can tap into that love and joy that want to flow that into our body. It's often used to help motivate us. So that when we're attracted to something, it's higher self saying, go for it. You're attracted to this. This is important. You should pursue that. And yet, you know, we can feel them both in this body. We feel the joy, we feel the happiness, and we feel the pain, and we feel the anger, and we feel the sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, they're just being generated from different aspects of our being. One's from the lower aspect of our being, this third dimensional aspect, and one's a higher aspect of our being. that is at that soul level, that level of guidance, that level of higher understanding and awareness, that we can evolve more and more in our life to be part of that higher aspect of our being and not just be pushed around, like I think you were talking at one point about being victimized by this reality. It's ourselves that victimize ourselves by getting caught in these different lower negative thought forms and emotions. And when you were talking about two-dimensional geometries, those that you can draw on a paper or put up on the wall, like Gail was referring to them as thought forms. They are something that you see, and when you see them, something is triggered inside your awareness, your consciousness, and you, whatever you believe, you're bringing to bear for that particular pattern and working with that energy.
I found it fascinating, popped up into my mind when you mentioned the two dimensions. There was an episode of Star Trek Next Generation, which I tend to refer to the Trekkie experience a lot, where they got caught. They couldn't move. They were in outer space somewhere, and there, for some whatever reason, they could not move until they started to analyze the area they were in, and they realized they were caught in this river of beings that were only two-dimensional. You couldn't see them as if it were like a piece of paper, a flat piece of paper. You couldn't see them from the edge. You had to go up above the edge in order to actually see them. These creatures to move, go on their way, you know. So to me, it's wild. The possibilities that are out there. I would really like to thank the two of you for giving me so much time here on the program to talk about this aspect of sacred geometry. There's, as I said before, there's still a lot more we can talk about. I really do appreciate what you've shared with us, and I hope we can have you back to continue this conversation.
You betcha.
Anytime. It would be fun.
I do have three final questions for each of you. I guess that means there are six, but anyway. But before I ask those questions of you, I want to thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, where we're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We are here on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for a special edition of Tell Me Your Story. You don't want to miss that one. And then we're here Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m. So that's nine programs, nine different topics, nine different guests. There's something, I don't know, special about the number nine, I guess. And I have to have you folks maybe define that for me one of these days. But we hope that you will join us. We're streaming live at all those times at richarddugan.com. And we podcast all of these programs at richarddugan.com, but also at SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and many other locations. We are on YouTube, where you will have to go to see the diagrams that Gregory has shown us throughout this program. Fascinating, especially the fractals. Matter of fact, that one cauliflower one I'd seen before, and I was watching a video where they were actually diving deeper and deeper and it never changed. I mean, you went in and then it expanded and it's the same thing, and you went in further and so forth. It was fascinating. We hope that you will subscribe to either the podcast and or the video cast, and then click notification so that when a new conversation is posted, you will be notified and you can tune into that conversation. We ask that if you can support the work that we are doing financially, we would be ever so grateful. I thank those who have helped and those who will help. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You'll go to PayPal. It's there for your security as well as ours. And when they ask for an email address to whom you're sending, put in richard@richarddugan.com. And again, thank you so much for that support. And we also ask that you take time during this, the decade of perfect vision, to go within and listen to that still small voice of guidance and support and encouragement, and sometimes just silence. And sometimes, as they say, silence is golden. Actually, I think it's even more precious than gold, but you can't cash it in. You just have to experience it. It's a wonderful thing. And find a place that you can go out in nature like I have found. Even though we're right by the highway, there are those times when it is utterly quiet and you can hear the frogs off in the distance croaking, which reminds me from what I have learned of ecosystems that when the frogs are croaking, the ecosystem is intact. When you don't hear them, that's when you've got a disconnect. So I hope that you hear them wherever you live. With all that being said, we have three final questions, and I'm going to bounce it back and forth between the two of you so that each of you has the opportunity to maybe think about your response. So we'll start with you, Gail.
Okay.
Who is Gail Hoag?
I am the soul.
And to Gregory, who is Gregory Hoag?
I'm the one swallowing my lemonade right now. But prior to that, you know, he's a character that I sometimes am happy to be part of and sometimes feel like needs a lot of work. But I just keep hanging out because that's my opportunity.
To Gregory, what gets you up in the morning?
The light. It's always the light. It's that wakens me up. And I look behind that and feel connected. So that's what gets me up.
And to Gail, I ask you, what gets you up in the morning?
I wake up feeling grateful for what the day will bring. No matter what that is, whether it's pleasure or pain, it's something that just is about being alive. And so that's what keeps me up, is discovering what's next, being present.
And finally, Gail, what was your best day?
Best day. Oh my. Oh, that's an interesting question. I have to say my best day was the day I was born, because it started everything. And without that, there wouldn't be anything at all here.
And of course, to you, Gregory, what
That's not fair.
What was your best day?
Oh, I was born before Gail. But my best day, oh gosh. I'd say right now, this is turning into my best day. And thank you, Richard, for being part of it.
Yeah.
And I thank the two of you for being part of my day, a part of this program and the work that we are doing as I've said before, when I was a kid growing up in school, they said, we know that there's something you want to be when you grow up and what you want to do. But stay away from wanting to change the world because it's really too big. Just pick little things. Well, I'm now 63, almost 64. I want to change the world. And through the work that you folks are doing, honestly, I believe we are doing just that. We are changing the world. Everybody has their own view of what the world, what they want the world to look like, and that's just fine. My hope and desire is that everyone can have the choice to have the world the way they want it for themselves, without and realizing that we are all connected. Take that into consideration, that we are all one. And so if you go, and this is why I promote the decade of perfect vision, the 2020s, when we go within and we tap into that still small voice, it's not that we're all going to get exactly the same answer. Of course not, because we're all individuals as well. But what we get is our part, if you will, as Shakespeare said, the whole world's a stage and we're nothing but actors. Well, we all have roles to play, but they're all, shall we say, congruent. They're all connected. They all play together. We're not all on the stage at the same time, but we come and we go and we do our thing so that, I don't know, the next generation or the next generation will pick up the mantle, pick up the gauntlet, pick up the baton, if you will, and continue to move forward and upward as we raise our consciousness. So I thank you for being a part of that. And I thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, as we're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And until our next broadcast, podcast, video cast, love to Lal, Jeanette, I'm still listening. Dad, continue to be happy, because I am. To my best friend, Smokey, I'll see you on the other side. And to my dear friend, Zorro, aho, aho.